It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older than one.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Here I go again on my own. Going down the only road I've ever known.
It is time to get over the hump. It is a Wednesday edition, hump day edition of the Sports Rush. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. And we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. It's 46862, 46862 for the time being. And coming up on the show, we got a big show on the way. Hour number two, we've got back-to-back guests with Derek Adams, the state championship coach of the Canterbury Cavaliers. He'll be joining us. You say, Adam, that he is joining us from his spring break? He's actually taking time out of his vacation to jump on the show with us, or...
I do believe that is the case. He said yesterday that they have some spring break plans throughout the day, but 5:20 would work wonderfully.
Okay, so 5:20 it is. We'll talk to Derek Adams about winning the state championship and bringing one home to the 260. Also on the way, we've got Rayfield Davis, former Southside Archer, more importantly, a former Purdue Boilermaker, who is now enjoying the Boilermakers making it into the NCAA Final Four. And we'll talk to Rayfield Davis as a representative of all of the great players from the past that kind of celebrated with this year's Boilermakers. And, you know, there's been a lot of good ones. Robbie Hummel, of course, he was courtside with radio broadcast, and, you know, that team fell short. You know, you just recently you had the Carson Edwards tournament where he just went off and made some ridiculous shots. Ryan Klein, you know, you go back a little further and you can talk about Juwan Johnson and Etuan Moore and who else you got that was in the past? So many.
Oh man, the list goes
big
on,
man
on.
Isaac Haas.
Oh yeah.
You know, you've got so many that have played there, have had success there, but have never tasted that sweet juice of a Final Four. And so this year's team is doing it. Purdue is celebrating it, and we'll talk to Rayfield Davis about it coming up in just a little bit. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Your questions, comments, or suggestions. How about last night? I told you, turn it on. It's showtime, baby. Indiana State put on a show last night. They get the win over Utah, 100-90. What a wild game for Indiana State. I mean, first of all, they're extremely entertaining. They're a fun team to watch. And for all those people that complain about how ugly that Virginia game was, I mean, that should serve as validation that if you wanted to be entertained in the NCAA tournament, this was the team to be watching, was Indiana State. They play a fast pace. They all cut extremely well. Robbie Avila is a national star now with his unique look and his ability to play inside and outside. But you know what? Here's the thing, and I'm not trying to compare his talent level, but he has a game very similar to Nikola Jokic. Have you noticed, I mean, the way he plays inside and outside?
Absolutely.
And the way he distributes the ball, because Jokic is a very good passer and Avila is a very good passer.
Yeah, no, makes some great passes and can, he also kind of has a similar form on the three where he's just kind of...
Well, he's got a similar form, period.
Yeah.
They've got matching dad bods. But
that's true.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that makes it so enamored that people just love him is is the fact that he doesn't look like your typical basketball player. He looks like a guy that was the nerd in accounting class. No offense to any accountants.
Yeah, the goggles are great.
But, yeah, he's got the goggles and just doesn't have the physique that you see from a lot of athletes. But yet the dude plays strong around the basket. He has great footwork. He's got a terrific three-point shot, makes his free throws. And I just love the way he distributes. You know, you get open when Avila has the ball and he's going to find you. And it's just a fun game, fun team to watch. And last night they beat Utah despite the Utes going 17 of 29 from three-point land. How do you lose a game? I would love to go back because I don't know if records are kept as far as teams that hit 17 threes and what their record is or how long it's been since a team that hit 17 threes has lost a game. If anybody knows that information, let us know. Maybe some... You know, ESPN Sports Center or somebody like that had it last night. I don't know. I didn't see it. but I wasn't up late enough for the late night Sports Center. And so I don't really know. But, you know, you make 17 threes. What's your chance? Your chance to win has to be like 90-some percent.
Ask Alabama about playing Purdue.
Yeah, that's true. There's another case in point. How many did Alabama have that
wasn't
day?
Wasn't it like 19 threes?
I don't know.
I'll find out.
You're the guy to look it up.
I'll find out.
But it doesn't happen very often. Maybe it did happen with Alabama and Purdue, now that I think about it. Because that was a game where Alabama shot threes and Purdue pounded it inside. But it was Indiana State kind of just showing the world once again on a national television audience what the NCAA tournament committee missed out on.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, including myself, thought that it was a no-brainer that you would put Indiana State in over Virginia when you looked at the resumes. But they went with the big conference, and they paid the price for it. They got an ugly performance from Virginia and 14 mighty points in that first half. Shoot, Indiana State scores 14 minutes between commercial breaks. it's crazy.
Yeah.
They just up and down. They share the ball so well. They play a great brand of basketball. And it's going to be a shame when Josh Schertz announces that he's leaving to go to St. Louis. Mm. And I do think, by all indications, that is coming. In fact, Josh Schertz had a statement today saying that he wanted to dispel the rumors that there were reports out there that he had had conversations, and he said he has never had a formal conversation. Now, you know, you've got agents for a reason. They work out a lot of the details when you're not available to talk to somebody. And I don't know, you know, I can't sit here and say for sure that he's going, but yet he has never come out and denied it. And if you don't come out and deny it, then the rumors and reports are going to continue. Because he didn't come out and deny that he had interest in going somewhere else. He came out and said, I haven't had formal discussions, haven't talked to anyone. My focus is 100% with this team and the Seton Hall game, which comes up on Thursday night. That's totally different. To me, that leaves it wide open that you're probably going to be leaving. Again, it's one of those questions where there's no right answer and you put somebody on the spot when they can't really tell you the truth. And why do you ask the question anyway? It goes back to the Connor Asesian question about are you going to stay? Or are you going to enter the portal when there's still 2 weeks of basketball left in the season? There is no way you're going to get an answer to that question. So why did you ask it? There's no point. You could ask him, you know, are you satisfied? Are you frustrated that you're not getting more playing time? Okay, then make your own assumptions. But don't ask him the question directly because you know you're not going to get a direct answer in response. But last night was a lot of fun. A lot of Indiana State fans right now. And it's going to be a shame because Indiana State, to me, is kind of the Florida Atlantic of a year ago. Mm-hmm. You remember I made this comparison, right, Adam, back in January? I've made the comparison that I think this year's Florida Atlantic could be Indiana State, and they never had the chance to make that run like Florida Atlantic did in the NCAA tournament, but they're making the most out of the opportunity they've been given in the NIT. And credit to them, because that's not the easiest thing to do. A lot of teams that end up being on the bubble and left out, they actually back up the committee's decision because they flop when they get in the NIT because they have no energy, no focus, no desire, no motivation to play in the National Invitational Tournament. And so a lot of credit to Coach Schertz and the Indiana State Sycamores because they were good once again last night. Avila ended up with 28 points, 11 of 14 from the field, and he was 3 for 5 from behind the arc. That means two-point shots, he hit 8 of 9.
Yeah, very efficient game.
Very efficient. Yeah. And it said he had 3 assists, and I'm like, well, then some guys must have missed buckets because I swear he made better passes than getting just 3 assists. Or he had the hockey assist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drop it to a guy cutting who passes it on a one touch across the paint.
Keep it moving.
Yeah, and but it was just it was a fun watch last night, and it's cool to see that the finals are in Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Absolutely, very historic venue.
You go from one historic venue in Madison Square Garden to another historic venue, but the nice thing for Indiana State is the second historic venue is a lot closer to Terre Haute.
Yeah,
and so it was packed last night. The environment was insane. I think it actually was louder than it was than it has been for most home games for Indiana State. And it will probably be even louder come Thursday. You know, they sold out the game on Thursday before last night was played.
Yep, before they even knew if it would be Indiana State.
Yeah, so there were a lot of people willing to gamble on those tickets. And their gamble paid off because now they're going to be in the house to see Indiana State play Seton Hall for the championship of the NIT. Well, news came down today. It affects the Colts. It's not directly the Colts, but it does affect the Colts. The Houston Texans just pantsed the Indianapolis Colts. That's what it feels like, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like the Colts were standing there and Houston snuck up with a little giggle and just pulled the pants down. That's exactly the way you feel. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have worn an elastic waistband. It was not a good day to go commando because Houston has pulled off a big move today. Stephon Diggs is going from Buffalo to the Texans.
Man.
They are loading up the weapons around C.J. Stroud. And this is what you can do when you're not paying $45 or $50 million for your quarterback. You got him on a rookie deal, so you've got money to spend for other skill players. And Houston gave up some picks, including a second rounder. And they've got Stephon Diggs heading to Houston with the Texans. We'll join up with Joe Mixon, who they picked up in the offseason from the Bengals, and of course, C.J. Stroud. So the entire division seems to be moving up. So, you know, here's the thing that kills me. Yesterday, Julian Blackmon decided to re-sign with the Colts. And Chris Ballard has been very aggressive and has done the job in keeping Colts players as Colts players. And I joked about a month ago with Kent Sterling. I said the motto for the Colts should be, we're going to run it back for our new quarterback. Because the Colts were 9-8 last year. Running it back means you want to come back and you can't wait to have another 500 season. I mean, what's that law where is that Einstein where you know, you do the same thing and expect a different result?
Yeah.
The definition of insanity, right?
Yep.
Well, that's what we've got here for the Colts and Chris Ballard. We've got the definition of insanity because Chris Ballard believes bringing the same players back is going to produce a different result than what they got last year. And that means the Colts are putting all their chips in on Richardson. They believe that Anthony Richardson is going to be worth having everyone else in place, and he alone is going to make this team two or three games better. 9-8 isn't going to get it done. You got to shoot for 11 or 12 wins, because if you do get in the playoffs, you want to not only win the division, you want to get a record that gets you the home game, especially after the first round. So, you know, you want to be shooting for 11 or 12. And you got to be shooting to improve the football team. If you bring back the same players that played to a 9-8 season, what are you telling your fan base? What are you telling the locker room? What are you telling the rest of the league? It's that we're happy just being above 500 and getting fans to buy tickets. That's it. That's all we need here in Indianapolis. We don't need to make true playoff runs. Indianapolis has no star power on their roster. None. Michael Pittman Jr. is a great player for Indianapolis. He's not a star in the NFL. And certainly not a star in the NBA, which I was going to say. There just isn't a star.
No.
And Jonathan Taylor, good running back. But if he's your star, I think you've got problems. It's not a running league. So, you know, the Colts, I think this is the time. Chris Ballard has to play the game of roulette. He has to be a little bit of a gambler. He has to go after it in the draft. And when I say go after it, you've got to get the best player available. Not a quarterback, but a best player available. And you got to make sure you get up into a position where you can get them. And I think that player is Marvin Harrison Jr. I think it'd be great for the fan base to have another Marvin Harrison on the roster. But I also think they would get great balance in the receiving core. And like Houston's building up the weapons around C.J. Stroud, come on, Indianapolis, build some weapons around your young quarterback that you expect so much from, Anthony Richardson. You made sure that Michael Pittman Jr. didn't leave and won't leave for a while. Got him now on the long-term deal. Take care of the other side, and you can get it on a rookie contract if you gamble and go get him. But you can't just sit at 15 and see who falls to you. And then when the player you want doesn't fall to you, what does Chris Ballard do?
Trade back.
He trades back.
And I think you might end up seeing him trade back again.
Well, and what do you get when you trade back? You get good players that aren't great players, no superstars, and you don't play for championships. And that's what they've got.
Yeah.
A lot of third and fourth round picks that were safe picks and ended up being a number of them were decent players. They're those borderline players. Do you re-sign or not re-sign? None of them have greatly overperformed. We thought Darius Leonard was going to be that guy. And then he went and changed his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became not that guy. And he ended up off the roster. So,
yeah.
You know, the Colts have to make some kind of a move because, like I said, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that seems to be Chris Ballard's MO right now.
And it's been his MO. You know, I saw this on X, formerly known as Twitter, from a good friend of the show, Destin Adams, on there. He said, people will hate it, but I really think there's probably only two or three players that could be on the board at 15 that would keep the Colts from trading back and acquiring an extra day two pick or two.
I don't doubt that at all. That's why I say don't sit at 15. If you know that the player is not an impact player and you're not going to get them by sitting and waiting, and there's three players that you really would like at 15, what's it cost you to throw in an extra pick, swap first rounders, and go up to 12 or go up to 10 or go up, you know, with a couple of picks, go up into the top 10 and go get your guy? You know, it just doesn't make sense to me why the Colts constantly sit and drop picks to get more mediocre guys, because all you got then is you got a lot of mediocre guys. And the best of the mediocre is going to be your starter. That's what the Colts have done under Chris Ballard. Try to go get a star. If you think Marvin Harrison Jr. is your star, go get him. If you think Brock Bowers is a future star in the NFL, go get him. Whoever it might be, go get him. Don't wait for them to fall to you. Go get him. Get the first rounder and go get him. You're close enough. You're on the cusp. It's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. It's not like you're trading from way at the bottom of the first round trying to get into the top 10. No, you're only trading a few spots. In many cases, the team you might be trading with could still get their guy at 15 if they feel like he's going to fall. And that's why they would trade with you more or less. But in my mind, if you've got a guy, you've got to go get him, because right now Houston's being aggressive. Tennessee is being aggressive. And the Colts are just watching the division just go right past them. It's like driving on the interstate and you feel like you've got the cruise control set at 74. So you're probably, you know, in a pretty good position and everybody else is going 80. And you're slowing traffic down. And that's what the Colts are doing.
Mm.
They're on cruise control right now. just trying to cruise their way to another 9-8 record. And if Anthony Richardson has a breakout year, they might win 10 games. But, you know, it's not a great spot. And the Colts aren't going to have an easier schedule than the one they had last year where they went 9-8.
No, I mean, just in their own division, they'll be facing a tougher iteration of some of those teams that they, you know, split and had trouble with last season.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Let's find out what's happening in the world of sports on this Wednesday. It's today's top headlines with Adam Lundy.
All right, thanks, Brett. Well, Fox Sports will launch a new postseason college basketball tournament starting next year. The College Basketball Crown will be a 16-team tournament that will take place March 31st through April 6th in Las Vegas. Teams that did not qualify for the NCAA tournament will be eligible. The Big Ten, Big 12, and Big East, whose games are carried on Fox, will each have two automatic entries. The additional teams will be selected by a committee.
The only problem with this is waiting to start it till March 31st, because all those teams will have sat for a couple of weeks. And the next thing is, does Fox know when the transfer portal is going to open up? Because, well, once again,
yeah,
Adam.
We've seen that.
Yeah, the transfer portal could have an impact on these postseason events. So, you know, for Fox, I think, okay, you better work with the NCAA and make sure they move that transfer portal back till after you have your event. Otherwise, you're going to have coaches. They're going to be concerned. You're going to have players that were wanting to bail. But, I mean, I love postseason basketball. If it's, you know, a good quality field and a well-run tournament, I really like it. And I think Fox can probably do that with 16 teams and their relationships with the conferences. But those other factors would come into play.
Absolutely. The Detroit Lions retained tight end Brock Wright, preventing the San Francisco 49ers from signing the restricted free agent. Detroit decided to match the 49ers' $12 million three-year offer to Wright. Wright, 25 years old, has 43 career catches for 424 yards and 7 touchdowns in 3 seasons with the Lions. And the Toronto Raptors are signing Fort Wayne native and Snyder grad Malik Williams to a 10-day contract out of the NBA G League Sioux Falls Skyforce. The 6'11 big man has averaged 11.1 points, 9.3 rebounds, and 1.2 blocks for Sioux Falls. Good luck to Malik Williams. And a quick MLB update. For you, it's the top of the first, Royals-Orioles scoreless, top of the fourth, Red Sox-Athletics scoreless, top of the fourth, Diamondbacks have a 1-0 lead over the Yankees, Reds-Phillies rain delay, top of the first, Guardians-Mariners 3-0 Guardians, top of the first. And that's a look at your top stories for today, Brett.
And coming up, we do have Derek Adams, the high school basketball coach of the Canterbury Cavaliers, state champions in Class 1A. By the way, we do have to, at some point this week, talk about the reclassifications.
Yeah.
Because I know that we've got a couple of area teams that, because of their success factor, are moving up. Bishop Lewers jumps from 2A to 3A. You've got Adams Central going from 1A to 2A. And the Snyder Panthers are going to bump up from 5A to 6A in football next fall. A couple of teams that are going to drop down, and I think probably the most notable for me, and I'm doing this off memory, is that Columbia City Girls High School basketball is going to drop from 4A to 3A.
So they'll no longer have that rivalry with the Homestead Spartans.
If you call it a rivalry when one team has won every matchup.
That's true.
They don't have that kryptonite, is what I would call it. They've just... No matter what they've done during the regular season, they get into the postseason, and it seems like they run into Homestead, and that's the end of the road for Columbia City. Well, now that they dropped to 3A, they won't have that anymore. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Don't forget the text line, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. This is a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Mike Nutter, team president of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. And you're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
I bet we have some listeners that are probably heading down to the ballpark right now because the Meet the Team event is coming up. 30 minutes down the road, they'll be signing autographs. Chance for you to meet the team or get reacquainted with guys that you saw play last year. But that is from 5 to 6 down at Parkview Field tonight. And then coming up on Saturday, it is the Parkview Field Open House. You ever gotten a full tour, Adam, of Parkview Field? Even those of us in the media don't get the access that you get if you go to the open house.
Right. I haven't had like the sanctioned tour, but I've seen most of Parkview Field. Yeah.
Wait a minute. So you've snuck your way around. You haven't had the sanctioned tour. It's like, I haven't had the sanctioned tour.
I've had to.
But I've seen most of the ballpark.
I've had to maneuver carts of gear through various hallways.
What, you cut through the locker room? Is that what you did? I mean, I'm talking about the locker room and the lounge and everything that they've got for the players, the workout facility.
I haven't gotten to the locker rooms. I've been down in the dugouts, but I haven't gone back
to
the locker rooms.
The clubhouse is what it is in baseball,
yeah,
of course. We have to properly identify it. It's the clubhouse, not the locker room.
The clubhouse.
But yeah, they kind of remodeled that to new specs that Major League Baseball expected. And so, but here's the thing. Even if you're media, you don't get to, because our interviews are not conducted in the clubhouse.
No.
We're not allowed into club.
We're not into club. We're not 50 Cent.
Yeah, we're not 50 Cent. but we have to get the interviews either in the hallway or up in the batting cage, which is where they set them up for the media.
Yep.
The clubhouse, it's very reserved exclusively for the players. Yeah, it's very limited admittance. But if you go to the open house, when I've gone in the past, you've gotten a chance to actually take a peek inside the players' world because they're out of town, so no one tells them that we're coming in and taking a peek. Now, I don't know if they'll be able to do it because the other open houses that I always went to, they were done before the players arrived in town. This year, the players actually will be on the road for their first weekend, and so they may have some personal belongings and stuff, and so they might not do it this year. But the tour itself, get a chance to see the suites.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they take you up and show you Mike Moss in the radio booth, because Mike Moss is never not there. He'll be in the radio booth if you have a tour of the radio booth.
He got a little bed up there.
He gets his mail there.
Yeah.
Mike Moss will be up there. Of course, you can see the visitors radio, home radio, the suite level, all the different suites that are available up on the second level. But it's a neat tour to get a chance to see behind the scenes at the ballpark, places you probably never usually go, and
unless
you'll have a chance to see it.
Trespass.
Unless you're Adam Lundy. Yeah. And you're just cutting through. Never mind me.
Hey, don't worry. I got my media
just pass. Just taking a shortcut. Yeah. You guys go ahead and get your jerseys on. I'm heading out.
the power of a media lanyard, Brett.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
All access. Check the pass.
I would never abuse a lanyard like that.
Permissible access is what it should say. All right. So, Indiana, of course, we know now they've got the five-star freshman, so they did replace Liam McNeely with Bryson Tucker. I don't know how much he is going to help. I mean, I think it's similar to a Jalen Hood-Schifino situation. And, you know, Jalen Hood-Schifino was a great player, but Jalen Hood-Schifino became Jalen Hood-Schifino because he also had Trace Jackson Davis on that roster. That inside-outside complement worked really well. But I'm looking at, what about the transfers? Who are they going to get? Who do you want them to get? Give me names. If you're a Hoosiers fan, drop a couple of names on me. 46862. Who do you think is the perfect prototype profile? Remember last year, Matt Painter said that he gave his assistant coaches the directive that this is what we need. Athleticism, ability to drive to the basket and finish, a guy that could shoot, a guy that can guard on the perimeter against someone else's best offensive player. I mean, they kind of went through and built the profile of what they needed, and they went out and found Lance Jones.
Who fits the profile.
Who checked the boxes.
Yeah.
Check. They checked all the boxes. Well, that's what I'm asking for Indiana fans to do right now. What are your boxes? What do you need? And is there a player that you feel that checks all the boxes for the Indiana Hoosiers? Now, if you go through and you look at some of the guys that are out there, Tony Perkins, to me, is a guy they should be very aggressive with. Tony Perkins is a good player, good, solid player. You know, he's a 14-point-per-game scorer with Iowa. He's an Indianapolis kid, which a lot of people probably forget about, out of Lawrence North High School. He is a 52% career, or rather a 32% career three-point shooter. Not a great number, but he's averaged 14 points per game and had 12.3 points per game a year ago. He's averages 4.4 rebounds, so he does a little bit of everything. He's the kind of guy you can trust to guard. I think Tony Perkins would be a great guy for the Hoosiers to get at 6'4", 205. It gives you that, you know, that big guard, that power guard that is not a bad thing in college basketball. Another guy, if you just want pure shooter, there may be none better than Cade Tyson. Cade Tyson is a 6'7 guard out of Belmont. Now, yes, he didn't play against the same competition that he would see in the Big Ten, but Cade Tyson, to me, is a taller version of Fletcher Loyer. And Cade Tyson scored 16 points per game last year for Belmont while shooting 46.5% from three. Ding, 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 ding. I think we have a winner. That's, I mean, yeah. Gives you size, gives you some length on the perimeter, 6'7 kid. You know, I'd keep an eye on Cade Tyson. Also, Frankie Fiddler, the 6'7 guard forward, more forward out of Omaha, 20-point per game scorer last year for the Mavericks. In fact, the Mavericks have had some really down years, and they were a better basketball team this past season. And most of it was due to Frankie Fiddler, who averaged 20.1 points per game, 6.3 rebounds, a 36% three-point shooter, not a bad number. And at 6'7", gives you, again, that size on the perimeter that you don't have coming back. I mean, you look at Cups, you look at Trey Galloway, you don't have the 6'6", 6'7", type guy on the perimeter. And then another one is a 6'3", guard who has visited IU out of Bradley, Connor Hickman, 14.4 points per game, 40% three-point shooter. So he can shoot the rock.
Absolutely. Checking the text line at 46862. We got two people saying that they would like to see Perkins out of Iowa.
Yep. First name I mentioned.
Yep. Somebody else. They need Avila from Indiana State University.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
There you go. Somebody else going with Bronny James, who reportedly put his name in the portal.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Bronny James out of USC. But remember, Andy Enfield, the coach at USC, took the job at SMU. And so there must have been a pretty close tie there. Now, the question is, does he follow the coach? Was the relationship with Andy Enfield? Was, you know, and here's the other thing. Does this tell us anything about the future plans of LeBron? Bronny James was at USC in Los Angeles, where his father was playing for the Los Angeles Lakers, which meant LeBron got to see quite a few games. Didn't see Bronny playing a whole lot, but he did get to go to a number of the USC games. Maybe this is an indication that LeBron is going to have some more time on his hands next year to travel to wherever he needs to go watch Bronny play.
I'll let you have your theories, Brett. I'm not going to read into it that much, but you look into it.
I can't call it a conspiracy theorist, but I will say theorist.
Somebody else just said that the Hoosiers need high IQ guys with experience and shooting efficiency.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah. The only problem is you've got, I can't say it.
Okay.
Don't have the highest IQ guy as your head coach, so what help does it give you to have an eye? I'm kidding. It's Mike Woodson.
Oh, geez.
I can't say that.
A couple confirmed guys that are going to be taking a look at the Hoosiers. Drexel transfer, Amari Williams, a big man out of Drexel.
I saw that. What? I don't get that. Do they need help? I guess they lost Peyton Sparks, and they're losing Khalil Ware.
So, yeah.
So maybe they need another big.
He's a 6'10 forward, averaged about 12 and 8, almost two blocks. So that could help.
Good enough.
At the big man, yeah.
Just get another guy in there with Malik Renu.
Somebody that's also going to be taking a visit this month, which I got to say I'm not super excited about. It's 6'3" guard Kanaan Cannon Carlisle He averaged 11.5 points, almost 3 assists, and almost 3 rebounds for the Stanford Cardinal last season, but he only shot 38% from the floor and 30.8% from 3.
Yeah, not great shooting numbers. Now, of course, if you want shooters, then you look at Jalen Blackman.
Absolutely.
But he's going to be a liability defensively and, you know, kind of ball-centric a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to fit in the system, but he is a guy that can really shoot it. Was one of the nation's top scorers this year. But I still think Perkins would be number one. Get a guy like Perkins.
Yeah.
Brings you some experience, local product. I don't think that would hurt you at all. But then I do think you've got to find a guy that number one on that list of your check marks, of your priorities, has to be high-level three-point shooting. And, yeah, everybody that you get, you want to have, you want smart guys. You want guys that understand the game, know how to play it, and when the coach gives out some instructions and schemes, they can process it. You know, I've seen guys in college basketball that, and I've joked about this, that, the read and react offense is only as good as players can read. And if you can't read, you can't react.
Right.
And we've seen over the years, players come in, and some that have some decent talent, but they can't fit in. Because every player on that court, if I do this, I expect you to do that. And if you don't see it happening and you don't do your part of it, it completely throws the offense out of sync. In other words, if I'm on the wing and I go one direction and somebody has to replace me on the wing, where is that replacement coming from? All those different details of read and react offenses. And a lot of times it's built on principles. And if you can't remember the principles, or you get out there and you get overwhelmed and can't see what's happening to know what principle to pull up, it can be very difficult to fit in. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Let us know who you think is the best target for Indiana. If you were Mike Woodson, who would be the top of your list to be the target? 46862. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Anybody out there giving Alabama a shot against UConn? Well, we'll talk about that. Plus, women's basketball has taken center stage. It's coming up here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I've got the classic case of the joke's on you. You've heard that before, right, Adam? All right, so for April Fool's Day, Green Bay, members of the Horizon League, decided it would be cute if they would change their image and screen name on the X platform, formerly known as Twitter. And so the Green Bay Phoenix on Twitter became the Green Bay Pigeons. Okay, and so they thought that was just something kind of funny and cute to do for April Fool's Day. So on April 2nd, they went back into their account to go ahead and change everything back and go to the old graphics and take the pigeon off there and take Green Bay Pigeons. Well, apparently, you can't do that on X. You can't just change your screen name and then change it back. And so they are now stuck on Twitter with the Green Bay Pigeons.
Their pinned tweet, "Dear Elon Musk and support, we changed our name and profile picture as an April Fool's joke on Monday, and we have been temporarily barred from changing it back. Please help.
Please help.
Please help. Oh, you poor Green Bay
Pigeons. I'm just an intern. I didn't know. But the Green Bay Pigeons, meanwhile, did tweet out, "In the meantime, we'll continue with our regularly scheduled posting." So get all the latest info on the Green Bay Pigeons on the Green Bay Pigeons X account.
Oh, geez.
Oh, man, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's coming up with a really good April Fool's joke, and then finding out the joke's on you. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. So Final Four, we're talking a lot about Purdue and their challenge against North Carolina State, which we have kind of been in unison on, that we believe Purdue is going to win this game against North Carolina State. It's the end of the road for the Cinderella, the 11th seed in this tournament. But what about the other side? Are we just taking for granted that UConn is going to be the opponent come Monday if Purdue advances through North Carolina State? Because nobody is talking about Alabama having any kind of shot against UConn. And I'm like, wait, let's not overlook this matchup. There is a way that Alabama could win. I think, actually, Alabama may have a better shot than North Carolina State.
At the upset?
Well, the reason I say that is because Alabama has one weapon that if it happens, they got a real shot at winning any game because they can shoot the three. And if they get hot from the outside, now they can't defend a statue, but they but they can shoot the three. And if they show up and defend a little bit, which is a problem for Alabama, and then they hit the three, UConn is primarily a lot of inside play there's a chance for Alabama. I like the way Purdue matches up against North Carolina State. I think they've got the perfect defensive alignment to take away a lot of what North Carolina State does, and I think North Carolina State's going to struggle offensively. And I don't think Purdue will struggle offensively. Now, remember, this is going to be one of those games where it's played with a very deep background, a cavernous background, because it's a basketball game being played in a football stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That can throw off three-point shooters a little bit. But if Alabama overcomes that, I think Alabama's got a shot. Now, if I had to sit, if you pin me down and say, predict the score, what is the... I'd probably give UConn a 15-point win.
Okay.
Just because Alabama can't defend. But what is one controllable part of basketball? It's defense, right? If you come out and you have the effort and you have the game plan and you execute it well, sometimes you can cause problems for another team. And so I think they have a formula, which is number one, they can't just go up and down and exchange points. They have to realize that. So they're going to have to commit to the defensive end. They don't do that often. But if they do commit to it and they can limit Connecticut, which has not been a super high-scoring team this year, and they can hold Connecticut somewhere in the 70s, I think Alabama has a shot, if they get hot from behind the three-point line, to make this an interesting game.
I think so, too. I think if Alabama does get hot, then UConn will also need some of their biggest players to step up and score a lot, too. Like I said, we did see that game between Purdue and Alabama earlier in the season. Alabama did hit 19 of 46 three-pointers,
wow,
and they lost 92-86. But that's because we saw Braden Smith score 27 along with Edie's 35.
So they might need 22 threes this time.
Just might.
Against UConn to pull the upset.
Just might. But, yeah, like I said, if UConn's scores can't get going and Alabama's threes are falling, that's when things are going to start spelling trouble.
Well, and speaking of UConn, how about the women also playing in a Final Four? You've got both the men and the women that have both advanced into the Final Four, and it's UConn versus Iowa.
Man.
Caitlin Clark versus... perhaps the most dominant, I don't know if you can call them dynasty.
Oh, I think you can.
I mean, they haven't won a national championship for what? What's it been, 7, 8 years?
The last UConn women's championship?
Yeah, tell me what the last UConn national championship was. It's been a little while.
I'll figure it out here for you.
Because they kind of went down when Notre Dame beat them. But
2016.
16, so it's been 8 years. Okay, 8 years since the national championship. I guess, you can still, I think you can still consider them at this point to be the most, what's the right word? Dominant is
decorated.
Not the right word. Decorated, perhaps, yeah.
I mean, they've won it 10 times since 2000.
Well, here's an interesting story that came out.
Go ahead.
This is the one that got away for UConn. Caitlin Clark told a... told a reporter that UConn was her dream. That was her school that she wanted to go to. And she was just praying and hoping that UConn would recruit her because she wanted to go play for UConn. And she said that the coaching staff and Gino Auriemma, they checked in with her AAU coaches and all, but never made contact with her or her family. And there was never anything there as far as an offer or an opportunity at Connecticut.
Whew.
Yeah. So guess who's going to be pretty motivated in this game?
Yeah, might be shades of Edie against Tennessee.
I think she's already told us what her motivation is going to be.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you shunned me.
Could you imagine if she had ended up at UConn?
Oh, I know.
That could have been a...
Well, and you know what? Girls growing up, UConn was the place to be. That was where the best players all went.
Oh, yeah. Any young girl born between 99 and 2005 is just going to be growing up seeing nothing but dominance from the Huskies.
I mean, that was just a badge of honor to be able to get an opportunity to play at UConn.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there were two programs. And then Muffet McGraw, to her credit.
Oh, yeah.
Got Notre Dame up to at least the podium.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, the podium has the three levels, mm-hmm. and Notre Dame was at least on one of those three levels. You know, I joked when we had Muffet McGraw on the program, and this goes back 6-7 years, and she had beaten Gino Auriemma a couple of times in a row, and they had the handshake line. I said, did you lean over and whisper in his ear, I own you? I said, somehow you got to rub that in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, Notre Dame got into the national picture, and then what Dawn Staley has done South Carolina has just been unreal.
Absolutely.
And so, to me, LSU is not, I mean, LSU's a good program. I don't want to discredit them, but I just don't think they've made it to that level.
No.
And right now, I think UConn and South Carolina, I think, are the two big programs in women's basketball. UConn, because of their long history of success, the national titles, the coach who's been there forever. And then South Carolina, just because Dawn Staley has made them a power and they're undefeated this year. So kind of the short-term team and the long-term tradition-rich team.
Absolutely.
And so, anyway, Caitlin Clark wanted to go to UConn.
That's crazy. Man, you mentioned Muffet McGraw, and I can just still see the Arike Ogunbowale game winner in my head. That's
unbelievable.
That's all that comes to my mind.
Adam Amin on a great call.
Oh.
It was, that was just a thrill to see that game. And then to come back and do it again in the championship game.
Yeah. I mean, that's
unbelievable.
That's probably the most insane back-to-back double tournament games I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. It was just completely incredible. By the way, Angel Reese has declared for the WNBA draft. Now, I found the post-game press conference kind of interesting. We didn't have a chance to talk about this yesterday, but the post-game press conference, she had her teammate kind of speak up for her. Flauge Johnson was the one that actually spoke, kind of defending her teammate, which I think was very noble and a really classy thing to do by Flauge Johnson. But I do have a little bit of a beef with one of the things she said. Let's hear what she had to say.
Everybody can have their opinion on Angel Reese, but y'all don't know her. Like, y'all don't know Angel Reese. I know Angel Reese. I know the real Angel Reese. And the person I see every day is a strong person. Is a caring, loving person, bro. The crown she wears is heavy, bro. She's the type of teammate that's gonna make you believe in yourself. The leap that I took from my freshman to sophomore year, Angel gave me that confidence to go be a dog. Playing next to a dog every day, and you know, just to see how the media ridicule her, went through our problems, but like, this is my sister right here. And I'm so proud of her. Like, the media, y'all, how they like to twist and call it a villain and all of that, y'all don't know Angel, bro. And I'm just happy that I get to play with her. I get to be around her presence. Her energy is different. She just made me a better player. She made me a better player, and that's what great players do.
The media does not create the villains. The villains create the villains. There's always certain players, Draymond Green, LeBron James at times, that love that role of the one that you love to hate, right? And Angel Reese brought it on herself. The media didn't just label her with a tag and decide, you know what? That number 10 in the purple jersey, we're going to write that she's the villain. That didn't happen. Angel Reese's actions and behavior is what created the persona that she's a villain. And Flauge Johnson was exactly right. The media does not know the player off the court. So the only thing we have to go by is the persona that you present when you're on the court playing basketball. And the whole thing about holding her hand over, you know, the face, you can't see me thing where she did that. She made herself the villain. She brought the attention to herself, and it was not something that you can point the finger at the media for. That's what she, that's the character that she created. We're the villains. We're the team everybody wants to hate. And then when you get hate and can't handle it, maybe you should go back and think, maybe we shouldn't have been playing the part of the villain if we didn't want to handle the heat in the kitchen. And so I think it's a little bit of a lesson to young players. Behave properly on the court. You never know when it might come back to bite you.
Yeah, for me, I think it's a little bit of her wanting the best of both worlds. She wants to be the bad A villain, and also
it got her talked about. It got her in the media.
But then when you lose, you can't all of a sudden be sad and crying and say, "Oh, the media's after
me. The media's picked on me." You know, yeah, I mean, you can't do that. If you're the villain, you got to go down kind of as the villain. And so I just felt like it was a character that was created by her, not by the media. And so you can't use that as an excuse, and you can't call out the media for things they wrote when you yourself are playing the part, and you know you're playing the part. But apparently that part was just too big for her. And I don't necessarily approve of playing the part. If that's not really you, don't try to create a persona that you're the tough one. You're the one that's going to get in everybody's face. You're the one that's going to, get cocky after wins. Don't be that player. And so in some ways, I do feel a little bad for her, because I feel like she got caught up in a web that she couldn't backtrack out of. Because once you get labeled with that identity, it's very hard to backtrack out of it. And I thought she showed a lot of sportsmanship and a lot of good character in that game the other night, because, you know, she congratulated everybody when she fouled out. She didn't have a big stink about it. She didn't make it all about her. And so I give her a lot of credit in how she handled things on Monday night. But she was a villain because she made herself the villain. 46862 is Parkview Sports Madison text line, 46862. Coming up in our next hour, Derek Adams, state championship coach from the Canterbury Cavaliers, will join us. Also, Rayfield Davis will get his take on what Purdue has done to finally break the streak and make it to the Final Four. It's all part of hour number two on a Wednesday. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.